Right, we'll start at the top, Vayin Gimel Aleph, but we're just going to review quickly what we left off with yesterday at the ban of Ayin Bet Amud Bet. It's a series of memorot here. The one that we left off with at the bottom of Ayin Bet Amud Bet, the second to last line, is Tanur Banan, Molich Chavila Mimakom Lamakom, a person who is moving his merchandise or his produce from one location to the other. And the assumption is that he's taking it from the place where he would get less money or less proceeds from it. He's taking it to a place where he would get more. So Matzpo Chaveiro, his friend finds him. Give it to me. I'll do the same. Whatever you were going to do, I'll do it for you now. I'll take up the produce, the merchandise, to the place where it would be fetch a higher price. And then, what's the benefit to this individual's offering to do that? Is that, as Rashi points out, that the intention is that once he liquidates or sells the merchandise, the monies that he receives, he'll then use those monies. And since he'll be able to use those monies, that'll be his compensation for acting on behalf of this individual. Question, and this is what we had earlier, is what happens if it's really a debt, if he really owes the money now, then if the person gives him the merchandise today and then he sells it at a higher price in the other location, it will be a vakribit because he's lending him the money immediately. And the individual is chayav b'achrayut, would be responsible for the items. If he's responsible for the items, it's equivalent of a halva'ah. It's a halva'ah, and then he returns more money, or he's liquidating it for more money from him, that's a vakribit. So the Gemara distinguishes or differentiates. Bishut mocher mutar. If the items remain in the possession of the mocher, I mean that the achrayut and the for the onus, the zula remains in the hands of the seller, the person who owns the merchandise, then it's fine. Because the loan then doesn't start until they reach the location where the higher price is. The loan doesn't start till then. Then when the moment the loan started, it started at the higher value. And therefore there's no avak ribit. On the other hand, if the lokeach, the buyer, takes possession of it immediately, then it's a sur, because then you have a classic case of the avak ribit, which is that he's borrowing the money today, he's becoming responsible for the item. Borrowing is not always to borrow in the sense of taking money as a loan, but borrowing, also the Gemara views, is anything that you are completely responsible to return at the exact same price that you received it. And that's the case if it goes into the Rishut Lokeach. And then he's going to return him more monies in the end because he's going to sell it in the location with the higher pricing. So therefore it'll be a sur. As we said, Tosus obviously qualifies here that he had to give him schar malo mizono, right? If he has to compensate him for his efforts, he has to give him his salary for what he does. And then Tosus says, if that's the case, what's the chiddush over here? He says, the chiddush is that even though when he sells it in the place where there's a higher price fetched, even though that's the natural pricing, it's not like the market changed in the location where they are, and that's why it should be a vakribit. But here, if he takes it from here to there, everybody would get a higher price over there. Nevertheless, it's classified as a vakribit. Now, the next case, which is, Hamolech Perot Mimakom Lamakom. He's taking, again, merchandise from one place to the other. Matzo Chaveiro Vamarlo. It's namely, give them to me here. You give them the payroll to me right here, and I'm going to use them or consume them right on the spot. But I also have stored away, or I have in the location where you're trying to bring your merchandise, I have merchandise there, and I'll replace the merchandise for you in that location. So now, this is a case of sa'ah bisa'ah, right, where I'm offering product today, and then I'm going to give you that same product back at a later date or in another location, where they'll fetch a higher price. So now, im yeshlo, we've learned before, im yeshlo perot, boto makom mutar. If by sa'ah b'sa'ah, if he already owns the merchandise, already has the perot in hand, then it's mutar. Bilav asur. Right? If it's not, it's asur. What's the difference if he has or he doesn't have this? So we've seen this a number of times. Rashi points it out again, that when he has it in his possession, we assume, d'mahashto ukumnino birushute, that we assume it's as if the merchandise that he has in the other location belongs now to the buyer, the exchange, the one who we did the exchange from, actually the seller here. We exchange the merchandise with, automatically will take possession of the other item. Not mitoras kinyan, but even though afkav lo mashich, even though he didn't have any kinyan mashicha here, sa'abasa lab ribit ktutzahi. Sa'abasa is not real ribit min Torah. It's a chshash, it's an avak ribit min Rabbanan. They were not gozer in the instance where he has it because he can make it look as if it's in possession of the seller buyer here in the exchange. And because of that, we say it's as if it goes up in price, it appreciated it already in his possession. If it appreciated it in his possession, that's not a big repeat because he owned it at the lower price and now it went up. It's his merchandise that went up in price. Now, the last case, which is v'chamarim. V'chamarim alimi makom v'makom ayoker kimakom hazov v'en chushishim. So now, the chamarim are allowed, who, they make money, right, by moving produce or merchandise around. So they are allowed to take it from the cheaper price and then bring it up to the higher price place. And they can borrow money from, they can take monies from the balabatim that are rich in those locations. And then they can tell them that, listen, I'll give you back at such and such a time the peirot k'desher ha'makom zol, like the pricing here in the cheaper place. And we don't worry about rebit over here. So what's happening? The merchants, they are buying merchandise in the cheaper place and taking it to the more expensive place. Now, one of the ashirim, or the rich people, says to them, listen, I want you to purchase peirot for me. I'm going to hand you cash. And when I hand you cash, I want you to get me the peirot from the cheaper place. And then bring me back and deliver me, right, the merchandise at the cheaper price. So now, we don't say that that's called schar hamtanat ma'ot. Why? And so the merchants travel back and forth. So they're
right, something. They're schleppers. That's what they do.
Yeah, they move merchandise around from lower price places to higher price places. Now, what some balabai says, you know what? You're going to go back. We're in the more expensive place. You're going back to the cheaper place. Buy me merchandise in the cheaper place. Take my cash. I want you to supply me back the merchandise. So what he's basically doing is lending him money right now, because he doesn't have to bring the money back for a certain amount of time. Now, when he goes to the cheaper place, he buys it at the market price there. Then he brings it back from the more expensive place. He's delivering to the balabayit the produce at the cheaper price. So that's a discount to the market where the mashirim are, because they have the higher priced merchandise in that location. So now, do we look at it as being schar hamtanat ma'ot? Why? Because he's discounting the merchandise to him in a sense, because he lent him money up front, and now he's bringing it back. Anybody else he would sell to in here, he would sell at the higher price at the yoker, because that's what he does for a living. But over here, he's willing to give the balabayit the cheaper price for taking his money. So
questions. That's like if I would give you money, say buy me something in the States.
Right, right, exactly. So is that permitted? Number one, because according to Rashi, at least right now, Tosfos is going to disagree with this, but Rashi says that the achrayut is on the chamarim. The onus is on the chamarim to deal with the pricing and all unseen that happened. So therefore, from the moment they take the monies, it becomes their responsibility, the monies. And a merchandise on the way back is their responsibility. That means that it's not in possession of the buyer. It's in possession of the merchants, the chamarim. And that means that when they move it back to the higher price place, and then they give them this cheaper price merchandise, it seems like because they lent them money, the balabatim lent them money, therefore they are giving them the cheaper price. Now the difference between asking someone to go to the United States and buy you is that you don't give them permission necessarily to use the monies, right, in the interim. You don't expect them to spend the money and invest in the meantime and then bring you back the cheaper merchandise. You expect them to take the monies and then bring it back to them, and that was all that's done. Here, the chamarim have permission to use the money in the meantime. So they're able to purchase and move stuff.
It's more like a halva.
Right, exactly the problem. Because they could buy, in the place that's more expensive, for instance, for tzvua, they could buy something that's cheaper here and move it to the higher price location somewhere else where it has the cheaper tzvua, sell it there, liquidate it, and bring it back. So why is it this schar hamtanat ma'ot? It sounds exactly like schar hamtanat ma'ot. Why are the chamarim permitted to do it? Now, especially according to Rashi, who thinks the chamarim have full responsibility for the item, it definitely sounds like schar hamtanat ma'ot. So Mar says, why is it that it works? My time. Why does this work? So Rav Papa Amar, Nechahu de Miglulu Tara. Right, so again, this is going to be a machlokas Rashi to Tosafot. There are going to be a number of machlokot here about how to explain the Gemara. But here, if I would have said the simple interpretation is that they exposed them the market pricing. What does it mean that they exposed them the market pricing? The way Rashi explains it is that because he has money, therefore he goes to the new location, and since he has more cash to buy with, the socharim who know him, right, of that place will give him either hakafa, they'll lend him on credit, or they will allow them to, you know, do business with their money also. The fact that he's a larger buyer now, or he has the ability to purchase larger quantities of materials, gives him an advantage in the new location. So that fact that he's doing it for free to the balabatim, so true, he's doing it for free for them, and he's bringing makom zol. But, on the other hand, he's getting back, in return for that, right, a compensation. His compensation is that he is now a larger purchaser of the materials. That's the way Rashi explains it. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Chananel explains it that the balabatim actually help out the merchants by telling them where the higher prices are. So I mean that they give them direction. I mean the balabatim knew where things were selling at higher prices, or they knew where to take the materials to. So what they do is giving information to the merchants, so they know where to go, where to purchase, and where to sell. So that information is valuable to them, and the fact that they're giving them that information is the compensation for them taking the monies and purchasing in the Makom Hazol. So the indication for Rav Papa is that the salary or the what we classified otherwise as Shecharim Tetem Ma'ot is offset by a value that's given to the merchant, either according to Rashi because he's a larger quantity buyer now, he's buying right in bulk, or because right, according to the Rabbeinu Hanano, is because he's now given information that he wouldn't otherwise have, and that helps him in his business. And Rashi, the way Rashi points it out, is that he would be willing to do this even if they did not lend him the money. I mean, now, in our instance, he's being lent the money, and he has responsibility for the money, he's able to use it. But he would do it even if the Balabatim didn't lend him the money. They just handed him the cash and said, we'll be responsible for the cash. He would still do it because the advantage is to him. I mean, that's an indication that what he is providing to him is valuable. And that indication tells you that even when it's a loan, it's considered the salary, it's considered value that he can offset what we would consider the Shecharim Tanat Ma'ot. Now, the other opinion is, Rav Acha Breid Ravika, Amar Nechle de Mosle Gabayu. Right, so that the place where he goes, they will discount the produce to him. Why is that? Number one is because they want him to come back again. Right? They want him to come back over and over again. So therefore, they will discount the produce for him. And number two is that they know that they're not making any money on this. I mean, they know that they're basically buying at the market price there, and they're going to have to give it to these balabatim at the market price. So now, these merchants that know them, they come often and frequently, will therefore discount to market for him so he know he can make some money. Right? He'll give him, like, say, a 5% discount to the market so that he actually makes money on the balabatim's money. That even though he's giving it to him at the price he's buying it, but he gives him a little discount so he makes some money. Why? So that he'll come back over and over again. So that's why, either way, what Rav and Rav Acha are describing is they're describing is that the advantage that's given to the merchant here is of value, not value, that we don't classify as Shecharim Tanat Ma'ot, because that value is compensating him for whatever he's doing for free for the balabait. Rav wants to know, what's the difference between them? Right, between Rav Papa and Rav Acha's explanation. So he says, Tagro Chadato. It's a new merchant. Okay, the way Rashi reads the Ike Binayu of Tagra Chadato is that the Tagra Chadato, Tagar She'enu Nikar, Adayin, so the Tagar was not well known, right? In that case, the Madamar Miglu Hutaro Iko, according to the one who says that, according to Rashi, that they give him the market price, meaning that they will lend to him, and they'll give him more efforts, because of the shame of the Balabatim, right, that help him out in the location. The ones who give him the discount, right, because they hear that he's just doing this at market, at price, you know, meaning that he's not gaining anything from the balabatim, so they have to discount him. They don't know the guy yet. He has to come a number of times before they're willing to discount. So they see that he's a repeat customer, then they'll do that discount thing and they'll believe him. On the other hand, the merchant who is new and then he shows up with the balabatim's money, the fact that he has the shame of the balabatim will give him access or give him more opportunity over there. That's the way Rashi explains it. The Rif explains it just the opposite. He says the nafkamina is the hefeth, right? Just the opposite. But that probably is according to the reasoning that the Rabbeinu Hananel says. Right? According to the way the Rabbeinu Hananel says that the balabatim will help him out, right? That's not, they won't help him out with a new merchant because they don't know him yet. So until he does some business and shows that he can do it for them, then they'll start to help him out and give him the indications. Whereas the Mosley Gabayo, right, the merchant, as long as he shows up with the cash, the other merchant will give him the discount. Right, if he's willing to buy a larger quantity, they'll give him the discount. The Rif just learns the opposite over here. Now, they have a case. Tosfos disagrees with Rashi over here in terms of Achrayut. Rashi suggests over here that the Chamarim have responsibility for the monies and the merchandise in both directions. Tosfos says he doesn't see that as being the case. Look at the Tosfos HaChamarim. It's in the narrow minds of the Tosfos. It says, Perish v'konchis afil achrayut aderech v'alichal b'chazara l'chamarim. V'iyach shar l'markein. It says, it's impossible to say that. Why? Because we have remembered Tarsha the Rabbi Chama. If you remember that way, the Tarsha the Rabbi Chama was a case where he used to give the merchants merchandise to take, Right? And the Gemara wants to know, how could he do that? Why is it permissible? Because he says that when they used to get to the different locations, they would give him a break on the taxes, and they would wait for the shuk for them. So that was enough of a compensation for them. In that case, Rabbi Chama said, I took responsibility for the items. That's why it was okay. The okay was because Rabbi Chama says, I took achrayut for the merchandise, plus... Right, so I was, so then therefore when they sold at the higher price, it was on my cheshbon, so that was okay. What about the fact that I'm lending them the money on the way back, and then they're responsible on the way back? And that was the compensation, was the taxation and the, right, and they let up the tour from being paying mass, and the shuk that they waited for them, that was the payback on the way back. But if you see from there that Rabbi Chama thought that you had to have achrayut on the way, otherwise it wouldn't work. So that's why he totally disagrees. He says, He thinks that the whole, he thinks that the achrayut is all on the bala bayit. Right? Right? If they did not have this other factor, because what was the advantage? We said that the chamarim can use the cash today, buy something in the location where the bala bayit is, and sell it where they're going to buy the tevuah for the bala bayit. So the loan starts today, and the loan is available. So with the fact that they're going to this other location for free and bringing back the merchandise for him, that sounds like it's because of the loan that he gave him up front. On the way back, it has to be that the Bala Bayit is taking responsibility for the item. Otherwise it will not work, because then it's just too big a loss that would be associated with the merchants, that the offset of having these other little factors would not be enough. So what we're saying, Tosis is saying, is that he's lending them money day one. The Bala Bayit and Mar are taking responsibility for the materials on the way back. So what is the problem here? The problem is that on the way, they lent them money, and now he's doing tircha, he's doing all this effort for him for no compensation. So the offset, so the fact that he doesn't do for compensation is the fact either that they discount for him, they sell it to him in bulk, they will reveal to him where the good merchandise is, whatever the return is, the favor, that offsets the lack of salary for doing the work. That's the way Tosis explains it. Most of Rashi thinks that Achrayut is totally on the Chamarim in the whole way through. Now the Gemara continues, brings a story. He says that Besura Azle Arba Arba. So in Surah they used to sell four, whatever, grive or grive of wheat. They used to have whatever measurement of wheat. They used to sell four to Azuz. But Kafre Azle Shita Shita. In Kafre they used to sell it 6-6 for Azuz, which means it was cheaper, right? It was cheaper in Kafre. Yav Rab Zuzay the Cham, right? Rab used to give monies to the merchants, Bikabalalei Unsu the Urcha. And then he used to accept responsibility for the Unsu Derech, Vashakumi Nayo Chamsha. On the way back, he used to take only five from them. So, what Gemara says, Vinish Kol Shita. Based on what we just said before, he should be permitted to get 6-6, meaning that that's the whole case we just explained. That if he takes it in the cheaper location, then he should be able to take it at market at the cheaper location, because of the skar, either of the Magli Hutaro or of the Ozli Gabay, that's enough of an offset. Rav is accepting responsibility for the merchandise on the way. So now, if that's the case, why didn't he take back the full 6-6? He should have gotten a full payment. So when I say it's Adam Chashuv Shiny, that Rav was an Adam Chashuv, and therefore he wanted to be above and above board on everything. So he didn't want to look like, even though truthfully he could have taken 6-6, but by taking 5 it was clear that he was not taking Skarim Tanat Ma'ot, because the Chamarim were benefiting. They got to keep that extra amount that he gave them, so it was clear that he was compensating them, right, for the Skar, for the lending them the money on the way, and therefore there was no questions asked. Right, Bayamine, Vasim Rabbi Yochanan, Ma'ula Sot Bibgruta Ot Kain. Right, what we just said over here, the Bryce that we quoted until this point, right, was talking about peirot, or talking about chita, items that are readily available, and that are common year after year to be around, and that the same individuals will buy them. What about gruta oat? Gruta oat over here is, Rashi calls them shar pragmatia, right, other merchandise, right, before we've seen gruta oat being metals, right, raw metals or unformed metals. Either way, these are items that happen to, you know, here and there you have such an item, but they're not items where you'd have probably an individual coming back on a continuous basis in the market. That's the assumption of the Gemara here. Alright. Amalei, Rabbi Yishmael Bar Rabbi Yossi wanted to do this setup with the Chamarim, with klei pishtan, with linen and clothing. V'loi nichol Rabbi. Rabbi did not permit him to do this. Rabbi he wanted to do with other merchandise to do this. V'loi nichol Rabbi Yishmael Bar Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yishmael Bar Rabbi Yossi would not permit it. So the differentiation, or the difference over here between why it works by tevuah and why it doesn't work by these other items, is why do we say it works by tevuah? It works by tevuah is because the supplier right, will always be the same supplier. And so when he goes back each year, he'll discount to him because he knows he's buying it and selling it at cost. So that's something that is a repeat business. The other items here don't seem to be repeat business, according to the Gemara. And since they're not items that will be repeat business, there's no real benefit to the merchant. He's really not going to gain those benefits buying in bulk or being known to the merchants. All the items that we discussed before, which were these intangible, that become tangible, they were intangible benefits that were offsetting his lack of salary, they don't really exist in other merchandise because it's not a repeat. If there was other merchandise that acted the same way as Perot, which is that from year to year or, you know, every 6 months, the exact same merchandise, the same people would buy the same things, then it would be true. But these were not. It's a case that the Gemara believes is not in Ptei Pishtan and in Pragmatia, that would not be the case. Right? Pardesa. So when it comes to a pardesa, so now again, we said pardesa is an orchard. Over here, Rashi says it's a kerem. Again, it's a vineyard. Over here, now he wants to buy wine at the pardes itself. He's buying the wine at a cheaper price, obviously because he's buying it early on in the process, not when it's wine and all finished, but he's buying it at the kerem level. So in that case, right, he's buying it. Rashi says over here, qualifies, it has to be bought when it was a boser or a smadar, when the fruit is already somewhat created on the vine, so it's not davar shelo bal yodam, so he purchases it then. Rav asar u'shmel shari. Rav says it's permissible to do such, Shmuel says it's impermissible. Rav asar came into the kamei shavyot fei, right, mitchazik ki aganatale. Right, so Rav says, because in the future, right, what's looking over here is that he's paying him money up front, early on, and because he's paying him money up front, he's giving him a lower price. So therefore, when he takes delivery of the wine or the payroll, he's getting wine or payroll that are worth much more. So basically, he's handing him money up front, and then he's getting back in the back end something worth much more. So it looks like Tchar Hamtanat Ma'ot. Ushmol Shari, Shmol says it's permissible. Why? Kevin Tehavi Beit Yua Lo Mechse Kiyatar Natar. So Shmol enters in a factor here, which we haven't really discussed before, which is that by wine, there's a chance that it won't work out. There's a chance that, the way Rashi describes it over here, is that the chance that it won't actually come to fruition, that the vineyard would be destroyed, the grapes won't produce wine, whatever the problems are that come up, but there is a high likelihood that he will not get paid out in the back end exactly what he thought he bought in the front end. So when he's buying in the front end, he's taking on real risk. It's not part of the schar, because if you just assume that, it would be easy, by chita, as Rashi describes it, by chita, it's easy going, and almost 90-95% of the time, the chita is in at the end, and the guy will make money on it. So in that case, we consider it agar natar, because he lent the money up front, he's getting a cheaper price, back end, he'll get a higher price. By grapes, or by wine, there is a much higher percentage of loss along the way, or likelihood that he will lose. That means that he could invest and get nothing back. So over here, we look at it more as an investment than a halva'a, because it's not necessarily karov l'schar over here. There's a chance that he will lose. Now, I would have read tiyua here, if I just read the Gemara, tiyua is that it could turn to chometz, right? That it could turn to vinegar, that the wine won't work out. Rashi translates the word tiyua over here, that is meaning nearby nei dvar charata. Tiyua means toheh ala rishonim, what we have by nidarim, that he regrets what he said in the first place. So Rashi says the word tiyua over here means regret, meaning he regrets investing over here, and that it's a broader than simply tiyua in the sense of vinegar, but sense of any charata, any regret of having made such an investment, which means that anything that can go wrong, there are a lot of things that can go wrong in the vineyard along the way here. Now, if you remember, Tosfos discussed this earlier on. We had in the Gemara, and we're buying here. The Zamar by Shirley the Inish, the Meimar Lechavritz, and Samach Dalar Medvet, that it's permissible for a person to Meimar Lechavritz, Hele Chavritz, take these four zuz, Achavita de Chamra, for this barrel of wine. If it turns into vinegar, it's in your possession. If it goes up and down in value, it's in my possession. So Tosfos had a problem. Rashi describes over here, we would say takfa is that it turned to vinegar. So Tosfos asked in this Gemara, how could it be that if it turns to vinegar, right, that it's okay to do this? You're only taking on the market price fluctuation, but you're not taking on the losses. And we see from our Gemara, right, in order to be mutar, sorry, according to Shmuel, who says it's mutar over here, it's only mutar because you're taking on the possibility of it's not working out. You're not just taking market price fluctuations, you're taking on the possibility that this wine will not be good wine. So Tosfos, how could you explain the Gemara of Abayi over here that you're leaving the responsibility of it turning into vinegar, right, with the balabait, and only thing you're taking on is market exposure? How could that be permissible? So Tosfos over there explained the word takfa to be different. Takfa not to be fermenting, But takfa means something else that goes wrong. So that means that you take responsibility for a takfa that turns into vinegar or market fluctuations, and the Baal Bayit takes responsibility for anything else. So again, that will open them up exposure to both ends, where there is an exposure to the loss. The Tosfos and Samech Daven Aleph had to deal with our Gemara over here, which clearly states that in order for it to be permissible over here, you have to take on responsibility for the likelihood that there's a loss. That can only happen. Takfa, which is something that happens pretty frequently, you have to be responsible or exposed to that loss. Amar Rav Simi Bar Chiya, Omodi Rav, Rav Agiz, Vitore de Nafish Psidayim, that by Shvarim, where there's a high loss rate, even Rav would agree. And even Rav could come around to the position of Shmuel in an item that has a high loss. What the issue at hand here, what the problem is somewhat unclear. Rashi says that Nafshi Psudayu is because the Shvarim get damaged when they work in the vineyards. Although it doesn't seem to be the problem. It doesn't seem like that he's buying Shvarim over here. The problem is that he's purchasing wine or items in the vineyard, and the Shvarim are getting hurt. So the Bach references us back to a Gemara on Daf Lamed, where the Gemara makes the same exact statement in Lamed Avalaf of Torah Psedayu, that over there there's a large loss for the Shvarim, and there Rashi explains that it's a bi-directional loss. That the loss is not only the Shvarim who get damaged, their legs get damaged when they work in the fields, but also they damage the vines themselves. That the vines themselves or the grapes themselves get damaged. And therefore it would make sense over here if Rashi is saying that if the vines get damaged, that the person has a loss here. It's not so clear that he's going to get out everything that he purchases on the vines, because the Shvarim, when they're working through the vineyards, are actually kick around some of the vines, destroy some of the peyrot, and therefore he's not guaranteed to get back his return. I mean, there's a very high likelihood that he's going to lose over here. That's one possibility. And that's what Rashi describes back on Lamed Amad Aleph, where when you hire Poalim, you have to be careful giving them Shvarim in the vineyards because they do a lot of damage. That was the Gemara discussion over there. The other possibility is Rashi is describing that he bought the Shvarim, and even if he bought the Shvarim, there's no guarantee that he's going to get the best shore in the back end, because they get damaged when they work in the vineyards, and therefore it's not so clear that if he pays for it up front and he's going to get delivery later on, that it'll be worth more later on. It's not clear that the shore will always be worth more. The way the Rabbeinu Chananel explains the case here, as well as the Rambam and the Rabbeinu Chananel describe a case where you bought or purchased a shore or an item early on in order to get the profits in the back end. So Rabbeinu Chananel explains that it's a case of Perish Mokher Agalim Ktanim. He's buying young calves. Ladot Edro Asher Yudulo B'Shana Zot. He buys all the young calves that are going to be born in this year. In that case, Rav agrees because many of the calves don't make it to full term. That the mothers, right, have miscarriages. So therefore, he's purchasing them in utero while they're pregnant already. And then he says, I'll purchase all that's born this year. And a lot of them don't make it. So since a lot of them don't make it, their miscarriages, that's enough of a loss that Rav even agrees. The Rambam says, no, it's a case where they're investing together. That they actually, he's buying the agalim, he's buying the actual calves in order to get them back in the back end. Over there is a high likelihood that the agalim don't work out to be better or more valuable later on, because they don't all grow up to be great shvarim. So that's what the Rambam describes. But either whatever the way is here, Rav is describing something where Yalgir Shmuel, where the loss is so obvious and so common, right, that it will be permissible. We had a similar idea with the Beitzim Zerot. Remember, with the eggs that don't turn out, that those was discussed over there, that there are certain items that are so common within a produce that we consider already a salary, considered already to be...
That's all already taken into consideration.
When you think when he's purchasing the price, it's priced in.
Because he knows that he's not going to get 100% of...
Right, so that's exactly why he's getting the cheaper price. That's the answer. I mean, he's giving him the discount because he knows he's not going to get a full payment back in the back end. That's where he's adjusting for risk. He's not adjusting the price because of his loan, he's adjusting the price because of the risk, which is exactly what you're describing, David. That's the discount is not related to the loan, but related rather to the risk that he's assuming, and that's permissible because that's a business decision, not a skarim tanatma oath. Right now, Alahanu de Shibshay Shibsha. Again, so this daf is replete with machlokot about how to explain the Gemara. Rashi over here explains that the Shibshay Shibsha are balabatim who used to have arisim, sharecroppers on their land, and these sharecroppers, they used to actually give them, or lend them the seeds or the produce up front. They used to lend it so they could plant, and then the arisim used to give it back to them in the back end, which would be basically sa'ab sa'ab, right? That they're lending the arisim. So over here, Shmuel would say, according to Rashi, it says these Shibshei Shabs or these Balabatim that lend to the Arisim and they get it back in the back end, Hafuchei Ba'ara. They should actually do some work in the land. That they will have a kinyan in that which is being planted. So if they have a kinyan up front of what's being planted, then it's not really sab-sa'ah, because they're getting what they're getting in the back end is actually what they own already. That they're a part of that planting process is okay. Tosfos over here disagrees. And he says that he doesn't think the word shibshe means the planters or the balabatim, but rather shibshe are used in other places in the Shaska means murot, the branches on the gifanim. So that what he's doing is he's purchasing the actual, when they go out and they prune the vineyards, he's purchasing all this murot, he's purchasing the wood that's going to come, the itzim that come from the vineyard, that he's purchasing. So this is not like the grapes. By the grapes, where he purchased it, Shmuel said, fine, why? Because there's a high loss rate. So the high loss rate is discounting for the risk. By Zmurot, he says, what's the chance of a loss rate on Zmurot? That's not a high loss rate on Zmurot. What is that? 95% of the time, they're going to grow. I mean, they don't produce grapes. Grapes go bad. That's a different story. But branches, the likelihood that they're going to go bad is very low. So because of that, the purchase over here, when he's discounting up front, it's clear because it's charam tanat maot. When he buys it up front, it's not because of the risk, but rather because of the loan that he's giving up front. So how do I prevent that being a problem? I have to go into the field. I should go into the field and work the field also a little bit. So I take possession, a kinyan, over these branches up front. So if I take kinyan up front, then again, it's not scharam tanam, oh, it's my own branches that are increasing in value in my possession. Right, so, v'ilo havya, v'chu kalva, if not, it becomes like a loan, v'asur, and then it becomes impermissible because he's not taking possession early on. So Amar Rabba Lahanu Dimitre Bage, that these individuals that guard the fields, right, they take care of the fields, they're watching them over here. Puku bahufuchu bebe dare. Make sure that you go out when they are bringing the produce in. Make sure that you go in and help out when they're doing dash and they're doing the work later on. Why? Heke delo tishlam skirutuchu ade ishata. Right, because you're not going to get paid until later. The skirut ene mishtalam et lesof. And skirut is only due at the end. When they're just giving it to you cheaper up front. So what's going on over here? The individuals that are hiring these people to watch the fields, if they finish watching the fields, their salaries become due. They come due at that point in time. Now, they don't hand them their salaries right away. They only pay them salaries after all the crops are done and everything's finished, because then they get their cash, right? They get their cash at that time. And that's why they pay them at that time. When they pay them at that time, they give them, it seems to be they give them a little more. Right? They give them because, so what would be the indication from this? Is the fact that they're waiting to collect their salaries, they're paying them more. So you have an effective loan from the Poalim to the Balabayit for the time period from when his salary comes due until the time that, right, he actually pays them. And that's why they're increasing the value over here. But what is the answer is no. So what is Rabbi suggest to them that they should do over here? He says, make sure that they work with you in the Goren, right, when you're harvesting and when you're doing all this other work. Why? Because then their schar, their payment or their salary doesn't come due yet. Because since they're still poalim for you, their salary doesn't come due. And what you're doing is deferring the right payment of their salary. By deferring the need to pay or the chov of their salary, then there's no schar hamtanat ma'ot because it didn't come due yet. So what he wants you to do is extend the due date by having them work for you. Instead of extending the due date because you just don't pay them, extend the due date by having them work with you. And since they work with you, the salary only comes due at the end. Ah, the fact that they're giving you more at the end, they're being nice. That's a matana, right? That's a nice thing that they do for you at the end. Or maybe they're paying you a little more because you helped out. Whatever the reason is, but that's not because of schar hamtanat ma'ot. So Amrle Rabbana on the Rava. So now, you know, Rava the Shita Dada, Rabbana comes to Rava, Gachal Mar Bipit. Right? You're eating Bipit. Why? The Kuliyam was Shakle Arba'a Umasauke Larisa. Everybody else in the world, right, goes ahead and they take four from the Aris, meaning they take the payment on the land, they take four to whatever, you know, four to every kur, whatever the payment is. They take a fixed payment per area of land, right? When the Arisim pay them at the end, and when they give them the Chakirut, they pay them per year, they pay them a fixed amount per area. So they stop them and they take four for whatever that area is, but Nisan. In Nisan, they throw them off the property, they say, you're done, just pay me four per unit. Mar, not to the Huad Iyar, you wait to pay these Arisim until Iyar, but Shakil Shita, and instead you pay six. You get them to pay you six. So what does it look like now? They are really owed their money in Nisan. So Nissan, everybody else takes these sharecroppers and throws them off the field and says, pay us four per area unit. So then what happens? Rabbi says, you know what, you guys wait till ER. You don't have to pay me until ER. So now what does it mean? It's really doing Nissan. He's telling them hang on to it to ER, but when he makes them pay, he's making them pay six instead of four. So it looks like he's charging them interest for waiting to pay them back in ER. So he says, looks like, he says, how could it be that you, Rav, are charging interest? So he says, he says, I'm not doing wrong. You guys are actually wrong. Why are you guys wrong? When you hand over land to a sharecropper, to a choker, it's his land. It's actually his land. If it's his land, when you throw them off the land in Nisan, you're actually causing them a loss. Why? Because what the Tu'ah will fetch at that time is lower, and it's not fully finished. When you throw them off, you're throwing them off when the value of the produce is much lower. I wait them to ER. I let the wheat grow out and the price go up. And I give them a larger profit. So therefore, what's in the end, when they pay me six, they're not paying me six because I get into Kamatamatno. They're paying me six because I'm giving them much more valuable land. They're better off being sharecroppers with me because I let them go to the end. And therefore, when they share the outcome of the produce with me, they're going to make a lot more money. Since they're making a lot more money, the land itself is more valuable to them. So when they're paying me, they're actually paying for more value. That's exactly what the end, they're actually paying, they're getting more, and they're paying for that increased value. That's the difference between the four and the six. So he says, you were doing wrong. Not only am I not I'm not charging them refit, but I'm actually, you guys are incorrectly throwing them off the land early. By throwing them off the land early, you're actually hurting their resim, and their resim have a sheepwood on the karka, and they should be able to work until the end. And the fact that you're throwing them off early and giving them less money, that's what's being done wrong here. So Rabbi says, not only am I not giving rebate, but you are doing the wrong thing by throwing them off early. Right now, Rav Mari bar Rachel. Now Rav Mari is the son of Rachel. Why was he called Rav Mari bar Rachel? So Rashi explains over here the story. It was a story that we saw together. That Bat Shmuel Hava, she was the daughter of Shmuel. Benishbet, she was taken captive. Two daughters of Shmuel were taken captive. Benishbet, and they ended up marrying their captives. The whole story there with one of the individuals who ran away, who checked on them before he left, and they ended up marrying the captives. Right then, Nachri Nitgayer. And then later on, the Nachri was Nitgayer. So Shmei Isur Giyura. Her husband's name was Isur Giyura. Rav Mari Horata Shalom Bikdusha. He was conceived before the Geirut. Later, Tobit Shua, Kedusha, and later on, he was born after the Geirut. Machmat Kvodo, Talu Al Shemimo. So his Kobo, they put him after his mother, who was clearly Jewish, and it wasn't any issue. So therefore, they called him Rav Mari Bar Rachel. Tosfos over here mentioned that he was in the name, it was in the time of Rava. But he says that there's also another Rav Mari, who was the son of Rabba, who was also called Rav Mari Bar Rachel. So I don't know, Tosfos says that there are actually two of them. It sounds like over here that this is the one that Shmuel's daughter. So Rabbi Rachel Mashkin Lei Hau Nachri Beita. So Rabbi Mari Bar Rachel had an outstanding loan with this non-Jew, and the non-Jew gave him his house as a collateral. So Hadar, this non-Jew went ahead and then sells the house to Rava. Right. So even though it's now a mashkon with Abaye, he goes ahead and sells it to Rava. So Natar Tracer Yarchei Shato, 12 months, maybe it's a year, right? And then Shakal Agar Beita. Then he took the rent for the house, and Amatale the Rava. So Abaye waits the first 12 months. Rav Mari Bar Rachel waits for the first for 12 months, and he doesn't pay him anything. Then after that, Rav Mari Bar Rachel, if he was living there, he goes and then he starts paying him the rent or the value of the property, because Rava owns it now. Rav Mari Bar Rachel is there. So he says, Amarle, so he explains to him, Hi, Delo Amatale the Mar Agar Beit Adidna, why didn't I pay you for the first year? Why didn't I pay you the rent? It's because Stamashkan Toshato. We saw before that Stamashkon is for the minimum of a year. So since it's a minimum of a year, there's no way that the Goy could have removed you from the property for the first year. Even if he paid you back the money, he wouldn't be able to take the Mashkon back. So in that case, it was clearly in your possession for that year. It's clearly in that possession for your year. Even when I purchased it for the Nachri, he wasn't able to sell it to me for that year because he didn't own it for that year. So therefore, I don't have to pay you the rent for that year. After that point in time, right, because Ipai Nakhir the Salkid, Lambi Matsi Masalikli, right, if at that point, Rabbi Mari Bar Rachel says, he couldn't remove me for the first year, so therefore I don't owe you it. Hashal Lishke Omar Agarbeita. But at this point, since he could take it back at this point, you should take the rental fee. You should take the rental fee. If I've been there, if I use it, you should take the rental fee because you, Rava, now own it. Right? Since you, Rava, now own it, therefore you're going to pay you. Rashi explains that he's paying him now up front for the next year, the rent for the next upcoming year. Although, even though we know that Schirut is only Mishkalim, but so, for some reason he's paying him the money up front over here, which is Tosfos discusses. So he says, Amalei, you have a Yadan, a Rabba, says right away, had I known Davin Mushkanle, Lamar, had I known that it was a Mashkum to you, Lo Avis Vinale, there's no way I would have purchased it. There's no way I would have purchased this property knowing that it was a Mashkum that was protecting your loan. Hashtag a Dinayim of Din Lacha. Therefore, I will treat you like they would in their Din. What's that? Kalema, Tolom, Misalki, Mzuze, Lo Shakal, Akapete. As long as the loan is not paid off, the purchaser that purchased it may not accept rent, the rent fees yet. So it says, Ananame Lo Shakal, Yaminach, Akapete. So too, I'll treat you in the same way, and I will not take the rental fee from you until what? Until it's paid off, until the loan is paid off over here. So basically, you know, Rami Baruchel was trying to pay him rent because he thought that was the right thing to do because Rava owned it. Rava felt bad that he purchased it because it was a mashkon. He had no idea it was a mashkon. And he says, I'll treat you like their dinam, which is that when you purchase a mashkon, you're not entitled to collect the rent until the loan has been paid off. So that's what the Tosu's question is over here. He says, if you look at Natashat Agar Barbeta, Peirish Bekuntris, Agar Shanaba, he paid him the rent for the future year, Tema. Why did he wait until the end of the second year to pay him when it came due? Why is he paying him up front? You pay rent month to month. So that's why he was giving it. So he was paying him the first month. He was paying him month to month. Not that he was paying him for the whole year, but he's paying him month to month. That's one possibility. It says, if you skip down a couple lines, it says, Mil Kasha. Lama lo nicha lo mechovo. Why isn't instead of paying rent over here, why don't we say that he used it as a deduction against the loan? He's owed rent over here, and so we'll use the rent to take down the money that is now owed to. It was completely fine with the nachri shifra lo o laharot shehu noten los char shle nirek yoshev skar hava. Either way, you could say that. What was the? Why was Rabbi Marchal willing to pay the rent here instead of just saying I'll deduct it from the principal instead of paying rent? I'll just take down the loan. So either you have to say that Rami Barchel wasn't afraid that the goy here was going to pay him back, so therefore he didn't have to be no menachah from the loan, or he wanted to make it clear that he was paying him the rent over here so that it should not be like he's living there for free. Even though it's technically should be his, and it should be his mashkon, and it should be in it, but nevertheless, now that Rava bought it, he didn't want it to look like there was any skaram tanat ma'ot, because Rava is stepping in, right, to the place of the nachri now, because he owns it. This is a great question of Tosfos. Just learn, what's the din of Mashkon? What's the Shem Mashkon from? Shachem. He's a neighbor, that he gets first right of refusal. So why doesn't Rav Mari could just take it out from him and say, listen, I'll buy it, I'll purchase it. Tosfos gives the obvious answer. Rav Mari didn't want to buy it. Right? Meaning that he didn't have any interest in buying it, so you didn't have to worry about it. So here, all these little factors that Tosfos is trying to answer up, how we come up with a case that it works out, that... So now the Gemara says, Amar le Rabba mi Barnish the Rabashi. Chazi mar Rabbana de Kachle de Bito? Do you see the Rabbana that they're eating Ribit? De Avi Zuze Acham Rabba Tishrei. They buy the wine in Tishrei. Umavagadu betevet. And then they choose the barrels that they're going to get in a Tevet. So meaning that they purchase, when they come in and they purchase in Tevet, and they pay the money, Shakle mi Tishrei, Dilmavi Machmuts. What happens if they purchased it really in Tishrei? Then the wine, we know, and we just saw this in the previous stuff, that could go bad. And it's not sure, there's no certainty that the wine will end up in Tevet being their wine. The problem is that they actually come in Tevet, and they take whatever's left as wine. So they're only taking wine in Tevet, which basically means now that they're giving their money in Tishrei, and now they're coming and taking delivery of the wine in Tevet, but they're not taking delivery of the wine that they necessarily purchased, they're taking delivery of what is only wine. That means that all the losses are being borne by the seller of the wine, that they're not taking on any risk here. So why is that? Why is that permitted in this case? So I'm like, inu nami achamra kahayave achal aloki yahave. So he says, when you purchase wine, they purchased wine. They did not purchase vinegar. Right? When you purchase up front, right? That's a clear indication that you want wine and you don't want vinegar. Okay. Everybody wants wine and doesn't want vinegar. Why does that help you? So mikara dechamra chamra dechala chala. That the moment that you're purchasing it, at the dime it's a shrein, when you purchase the item, it's already clear what's going to be wine and what's going to be vinegar. It's not obvious to you and from an outsider, but whatever wine is going to turn into vinegar is already in the process of turning into vinegar. Whatever wine is going to survive is already in the process of turning into wine. And therefore, hayu shatehu dekame b'chare. They're really choosing it at Tishrei. They're really choosing it at Tishrei. Why? Because the differentiation between wine and vinegar is already not apparent to us from the outside, but in the barrels themselves, it's already known which is going to be.
Right? What is this? Yishrei?
What?
Is this Yishrei?
Yeah, no, so that's exactly. He's taking possession of the item at that moment. When he puts his money down, he's putting his money down on wine. So if you look at Rashi, Rashi explains it. It says, it says, they take the good wine when it's delivered. If they really bought it in Tishrei, Dilma Habi Machmet. If they actually took delivery when they paid for it in Tishrei, then maybe their wine wouldn't have worked out and turned into vinegar. The fact that they give him cash in Tishrei by dying Yitzhashar, Kibalava Mukher Achrayut. What ended up happening is that the Mukher, the seller, is taking responsibility for the wine to deliver him wine in Tevet, but even though he's purchasing it now in Tishrei. But Lo Dami Lohaud De El Deish Lo Chitim. Ah, why don't you say that this is the case where if you have the item in possession, then it's not a problem. Right, the fish yain ragil hachmitz. When it comes to chita, right, Rashi says that if you purchase it up front, if he has it, we don't question. That when he delivers you chita in the back end, we don't care. Because we say if he has it today, it's as if you took possession of it today, and whenever it went up in value, it goes up in your possession in value. How come we don't say the same thing here? He purchased the wine today. It's going up in his hands. It goes up in his value. It's no problem because he has the wine today and he can deliver it to you today. The answer is because there's a difference. And that's what we just discussed with wine before. It's the risk of it not working out. By chita, there's a very low risk of it not working out. If there's a low risk of it not working out, then when you take possession of it, no problem. Because in the back end, when he delivers you, even if he doesn't deliver you the same wheat, but consider as if you took possession of it today. By wine, that's not true. If you really took possession of it today, you would be exposed to much higher risk of not getting wine in the back end. Now when he delivers you wine in Tevet, right, he's not necessarily really giving you what you bought, because if you really got what you bought, you'd have a much higher loss rate. So that's the problem here. The problem here is that you're giving him, you're assuming the loss rate. The seller is assuming the loss rate, which is giving a benefit to the buyer, even though you have wine today to deliver him, but you're giving that benefit to him by not delivering him today, by only delivering him wine in the back end. By doing that, you're giving him a value because of the lending, the money that he's giving you up front.
That
the problem is solved because at the moment you buy, when you take delivery, you want wine, and you purchased it in Tishrei wine. And since, say, at 100 barrels, 20 of them are going to become vinegar, when you purchase them, you purchase that 80, because there's no way you would have bought the vinegar, because you're not going to buy vinegar. And even though, right, if the determination was only later, the wine and the vinegar would happen later, then you can't make this comment, because then he's really assuming the risk. The problem, the truth is, and what Rava says, is that wine is wine day one in Tishrei, and vinegar is vinegar already in day one. We just can't tell which one's going to which.
Today, right. If he sold all 100, we know by 100%.
That's going to be a problem, right? He can only really sell 80 of them, meaning that you can only buy less than what the full amount of his production, because then for sure you know that some of them are going to be vinegar, right? He's selling something that he doesn't have. Although we're going to see in the Gemara later on, and even if on one sa'a of wheat, you can sell multiple sa'a of wheat. So that might protect him, even though he's overselling what he has.
As long as you have
something in hand, that's enough. You don't have to have the full thing. Now this goes back again to that Tosus in Sanok Da'ad Amin Aleph, where Tosus says that it can't be vinegar. I mean, again, accepting the responsibility for vinegar is not a big deal, because it's already determined from day one. So him telling you it's b'shutech, we see from the Gemara over here, you can already do that. So that's, again, this Tosus quotes the Gemara that we saw with Rabbi Shmuel on this, to determine what the Gemara means in Sanok Da'ad Amin Aleph. Okay, let's continue. He used to give money to these people who lived on the riverbanks. Right? In the end, he didn't ask them for anything. He used to give them money to purchase for him merchandise. He purchased from them up front, whatever the merchandise is, to bring it back to them. And in the back end, they used to give him a little more. Right? They should, without any conditions, they used to give him more. So, Atal Kameter Vashim Le Mishari. He went to Rav Ashi and says, it's permissible for me to do this. I'm like, yeah. He says, why not? They're just giving you a nice gift. They're not paying you for the loan because you did not demand this of them. You did not say that I won't give you the monies up front to do this. This is not part of your agreement whatsoever. Since it's not a part of your agreement whatsoever, it's not considered ribit, right? Because it's really after the fact. Since it's after the fact, and they're giving it of their own volition, that's not classified as ribit. And Tosus points out that this is not Ribit Mucheret, which is that you're also not allowed to do a favor to someone even after the loan is closed, right? Because if it references back to the loan, he says, Shalyu Maskirim Shnot Nimishfil Maltov Shayu Bedilim Etzlo. They did not explicitly say it was for the loan. They just used to give him a gift. Now they give him a gift after the fact that was not absolutely necessary, wasn't written in or any part of any agreement, plus they didn't mention that was a part of the loan. So he says, that's not a problem. You can do such a transaction, or you can, right, create, you're allowed to accept this from them. But then he has a different question. He says, their land that they're planting is actually not theirs. So maybe karkanin exelet, and maybe it belongs to the original owners, and now I'm buying hot merchandise. And I'm actually purchasing from them something that I'm not allowed to purchase. Amalei ara l'taskom mashabdo. The land is all encumbered to the tax authorities. There are liens by the tax authorities on the land. Umalka amar, and the king says, right, dinu machusa dinu, the king says, manto yav taska yudechul ara. Whoever pays the taxes, right, is therefore allowed to work the land. So anybody who comes in and pays the taxes and takes the land, that is permissible for them to work the land. It's not considered an exilet, because the government says the lien for the taxation on the land makes it part, the tax authorities own the land until you compensate whoever pays the taxes. Whoever pays the taxes then can work the land. So if another party comes in and pays the taxes, they can work the land, and that's not considered to be gezel. Therefore, you're permitted to set up some this transaction. You're permitted to set up these this situation. says to Rabba, do you see these Rabbanon? They pay the head tax. So as opposed to the taska, which is the land tax, there's a karga, which is a head tax. Right? They pay the head tax, and then they are mishabit. They take these people, and they use them. They make them into slaves. They work them hard. Not only they work the mishabit hutfei, they do it. So that's some question whether the girsa tfei is actually in our Gemara over here. Tosfos brings down that there's some svarim that we're not going to raise the word tfei. Because in the end, the problem is, what ended up happening was that the Rabbanan would used to pay the head tax for these individuals. After they paid the head tax, later on, the individuals used to show up with the money and then pay their own head tax or give the money back to these people who purchased from them. So basically what ends up happening is that the money's become a loan, and then the tax, what they're basically doing is they're taxing them in between. How are they doing? They're paying the government up front for the tax, and then the individuals are paying them back that money later on. So basically what they did for them was they lent them the money. What are the Rabbanan doing in between? They're working these people. So they're basically taking scharam tanat ma'ot by working the people. So by working them, that has become scharam tanat ma'ot for the loan of paying the taxation up front. So how could they be doing such a, how could they be doing such a thing? So that's the question according to the Raivoid, according to Rashi, that seems to be the question. There are others, Rishonim, believe that the question over here is a problem of Isur v'Heter. How are you allowed to be mishabed in a Jew? How are they allowed to work a Jew? I mean, that there's a din that you're not allowed to be mishabed a Jew, right? That only an Ebekanani are allowed to be mishabed, but not a Jew. So how are you mishabed the Jew over here? So some Rishonim believe the question is an Isur v'Heter question. Other Rishonim, the Raivoid and the Rashi, seem to indicate here that it's a problem of Ribit question. So you might say, you say back to him, no. So Ichu passed away, so you didn't get this, you know, you guys aren't getting the memrote anymore. This is what Rav explained. Mahor kayu dehani tafsa de malka monach. So an interesting thing. The stamp, which is the stamp, you know, they used to have a stamp or they used to have a signet or something that indicated that someone was a slave. So everybody's slave insignia is in the Otzer of the Melech. The Melech owns everybody. Since the Melech owns everybody, so when you pay your taxes, when you pay your head tax, you basically get back yourself. Right? So now, what the king says is, oh, but the din is, whoever doesn't pay their own head tax, if someone else compensates and pays for the head tax, then they are actually now used, they get to use them like the king would. Meaning that the king owns everybody. That's basically what the premise is here. The king owns everybody. Since the king owns everybody, he either sells you back to yourself, or he sells you to the other individual. So that's why it's not repeat over here. There's no scharam tanat ma'ot. This is the dinar de machus dina. That everybody's owned by the king, and whoever pays the head tax gets to use the person. It's not an issue of a loan and not a loan. As soon as you pay the head tax, that's what you get to do. That's your permissions. Now, Rav Zeora, now the Gemara about the issue of Isur v'Heter is going to come up in a second. Rav Zeora, Achu de Rava. Zeora was the brother of Rava. It's interesting to hear about his brother. Avatokif Inche, Delo Malu. Right, he used to take people who didn't act or appropriately. They weren't doing the right things. So he used to take them in and force them to carry the wagon or pull the wagon of Rava. So here, these people, in order, if they didn't behave properly, if they weren't acting appropriately, these Jews, he used to grab them and force them to work for Rava, to carry Rava down the street and take his rickshaw through the streets. Right? Rashi describes this guharka. He calls it, look, Lashon Azmkan, right wagon. Right? So he used to take his right wagon, he used to pull for Rava through the streets. So Amar Lei Rava, Shaper Kavat. He's doing the right thing. The Tanina, we have a brisa. Ra'ita Sheinu Nohei Kushura. You see a Jew that's not acting plumbly. How do you know that you're allowed to subjugate him, right? Put pressure on him. Now the pasuk really ends. The pasuk should cut right there, which is that by Yevet Kenani it says lohem b'hem tavodu, and then the pasuk continues of achechem b'nei Israel ish b'achiv right lo. You're not allowed to subjugate your brother. But the way he reads the parsing, he reparses the pasuk and reads lohem b'hem tavodu u'b'achechem. You're allowed to be obeyed them and your achim. Yachal afilu nohei kishura. Even if he's acting appropriately, are you allowed to do this? Tamad lomar uvachechem neisol ish b'achim. So that exclusion of he reads achechem to both sides. They both do the same lohem b'hem tavodu, that you're allowed to subjugate them. And in the case where you're not allowed to subjugate them, what differentiates? How do you know what it is? It has to do how they behave. If they're behaving appropriately, then you can go ahead and you're not allowed to be shmishabit. If they're acting inappropriately, then you're allowed to be mishabit them. So again, the answer of Isur Ve'et, there's also in this. They say either that if they're acting inappropriately, then one is permitted to subjugate them. So if they're not paying their taxes, if they're not doing the right things, then maybe also that will answer the question of Isur Ve'et over there. How are the Rabbanan allowed to be mishabit these individuals? You're not allowed to be mishabit a Jew. Right? Amar Rav Chama, Haimad Yod Zuzi Lechavre, the Mizban Lechamra. Right, so the person hands over money to this individual to purchase wine from him. In the end, he doesn't do it. So you give money to an individual, say, go out and buy wine from me, and then he doesn't go and buy the wine. So now, what Rav Chama says is, he goes, he has to pay him back, he has to deliver him wine or give him back the money at the cheap rate. I mean, at the rate that he would have been able to purchase it in such a location, which is the cheap wine. Alright, the boss, the money back, right, the money, he has to return the money and compensate him for the loss that he incurred, right, at that lower rate. Amar Meimar, Amrita Lishmaita Kameh the Rav Zvid Min Nardo, said this over before in the Dharmar, Ki Kama Rav Chama Ani Milim B'Yayin Stam. That's if he just said them, get me wine, that's true. Avo B'Yayin Zeh, right, but when he says this wine, lo. Right, that's not me. Then you can't say that. Why? Because there was no guarantee he could have purchased the wine. So now, but the differentiation right now that's being drawn is that what did I ask this individual to do for me? If I just asked him to go out and buy wine in the market, anybody could have gone out and bought wine in the market. That's not something that you have to have a decision. Yes, no, maybe. There's no maybe over here. He could go out in the market, buy wine. Therefore, he caused me a loss. He caused me some problem over here. On the other hand, if you say Yayin Zeh, he said, this particular wine you should purchase for me, then there's no guarantee you could buy it. Why? Because how are you certain that the seller is actually going to sell this wine that you're asking for to you? There's no guarantee. So since there is no guarantee, right, then we don't say that he has to compensate you because you weren't guaranteed in getting the wine that he asked you for. Now, Rav Ashi Amar, I feel Yain Stam Namilo. Even Stam Yain, if you just ask for wine in general, no, why? My time asmachtohi. It simply is asmachto, asmachto lo kanyo. Right, why is it asmacht over here? Because he didn't make any kinyan over here. There was no kinyan. Since there's no kinyan, it's simply an asmacht. He says, look, I'm going to give you money, right? And he hands him the money, gives him the money, and he says, go purchase the wine for me. But where's the kinyan, right, to lock in the... Okay, he made a shliach. Why is that kinyan? There's no kinyan over here that makes him into a... obligates him to bring the merchandise back.
If I'm a shliach and I do damage...
No, he didn't do damage over here. You can hand him back his cash.
Give him back his cash.
He gave him back his money. He didn't cause, you know, I mean, he's giving back the same money he got. He relied on him to, right, get him the wine. So that's the loss that he had. He didn't get him the wine at that time. So that's the loss that he had.
So Kenyan would mean some
formalized Kenyan that would make obligation in this case.
The law thing to show some, what do you call it?
You have to consideration. You have to have consideration in order to show that there's a binding agreement over here. So here, unless he has a binding agreement, it's an asmacht, an asmacht alokanya. It says, why is this different than the Mishnah that says, This is a Mishnah by Naris, a sharecropper. The sharecropper makes a deal with the Baal HaBayit. Im ovir v'lo avid, ashalem v'metva. If I don't work the field, for 1 year I decide, hey, you know, I'm a little tired this year, I'm not going to work the field. So that's a huge loss to the Baal HaBayit. Because the sharecropper doesn't work it, he doesn't get his, the Baal HaBayit doesn't get his percentage out of his field. So he says, in the deal or in the contract they have worked out, that if he does not work the field 1 year, you'll have to pay him as if planted. You'll have to pay him out as if he planted the fields. If it was worked based on the previous production of the field, or the best, whatever, that he has to pay him out based on what he got on the better years. So Gemara says, oh, so why isn't that an asmachta? Why isn't that considered asmachta over here? He's making a shliach to work the field. He's working the field over here. And then he doesn't do something. When he doesn't do something, all of a sudden he's got to compensate him for it. Why over here doesn't have to compensate? Gemara says, hatam biyado, hacha, la biyado. Over there, he's in control.
He can decide
to plant or not to plant. So once in his control, you're at some echadat, then you're some echan him, then there's a kinyan. Here it's not his control to buy the wine. I mean, who knows if the guy will sell it? He has to go out to the market. There are other factors that are involved that make an asmacht because there's no guarantee that he can do it. And that's the way Rashi. Tosos here discusses something that he discusses in Sanhedrin by Mesachek Mikubia, which at the Gemara seems it's unclear. Rashi over there it says that why from Mesachek Mikubia, right, there is no, it's not considered asmachta. Right? Because he doesn't know if he's going to win or not. He has no, in his mind, he has no idea what's going to happen, the outcome of this situation is going to be. And therefore, it's not an asmachta. Which would indicate the less control you have, the less likely it is to be an asmachta. So there, the Rabbeinu Tam disagrees with Rashi. It's also brought in Sanhedrin, the Rabbeinu Tam there. And later on, Rabbeinu Tam retracts this whole statement and agrees with Rashi. But to deal with this, the Rabbeinu Tam actually creates three categories of asmachta. He creates a category where you have no control whatsoever. When you have no control over whatsoever, it's not an asmachta. Why? Because you don't, in your mind, ever think that you were going to be in enough control, and therefore you're no mayor of a konet. You have a kinyan there because you have absolutely no control over the situation. And since you have no control, you don't think you're going to be able to influence the situation, and you're going mayor of a konet. The other case is, right, where you have very good control, like in our case over here. Right, here, it's hatam biyado. The case of the haris, which is in his hands, then in that case, there's two different ways it could turn out. If it's in your control, if you say something that is normal, like in this control, what does he say here? If I cause you a loss, I'll pay you back. So that's considered.
It's just Meitra.
But Meitra means the best years or whatever we planted before. Not Meitra, I pay you with Meitra Varetz. He's not exaggerating over here. He's paying him for his hefse. He's paying him for his loss. So now, when he's paying him for his loss, that is not exaggeration. So he thinks, right, when he thinks up front, he says, okay, that's my balance here. I won't plant, I have to pay him. If I plant, I'll get it. There is no, again, a smachto, because he was not gozen. In this case, if it's in
there
your
control. There's two things here. It was in his control.
And he's paying what should be.
The penalty he imposed on himself was reasonable.
It's a reasonable penalty. But if he's gazim, the penalty is is exorbitant or an exaggerated penalty, then even in a case where it's in his control, right, that is considered to be, right, a smachto. Because he obviously believes that he's not going to pay that out. Nobody would. He's trying to get you to believe what he's saying. That's why he's exaggerating. He's not exaggerating because he thinks that's really going to be the penalty in the back end. He's not going to control it. No, he thinks that he's never going to get to that point, and therefore it's an asmachta. Then there's a middle category where it's kind of in your control, not in your control. And then again, it's an asmachta lokanya. There it's an asmachta because you think you can control the outcome. You think there's a way to control the outcome, and you rely on that fact. Since you rely on that fact, then it's called the smachta lokanya. So according to that, it creates these three categories of where a smachta works and doesn't work. Again, where it's not in your control, there's no smachta because you don't even think that you're going to do it. The middle category where it's partially in your control, that's exactly where a smachta becomes a problem because you think you can control it, and it turns out you didn't. In the category where you have a lot of control, there it depends on what you guarantee. If you only guarantee the losses that have saved, that's permissible because it's reasonable assumption of risk. It was a reasonable assumption of risk, that's permitted. If he exaggerates, that's a smachta, because it's clear that he did not expect to ever get to that, and therefore he was clearly sumeich on his ability to take care of it, and then it will not be considered, then it would be considered a smachta, and it would be lo lekanya. We'll stop here.